presenting Radio Newsreel. A recent innovation in the gathering and presentation of news brings you the actual voices of the people who make the news. These are not impersonations. This is news, unaltered, not reenacted, but transcribed where it happens, as it happens. The Radio Newsreel.
Alamo, Texas. The worst train and automobile crash in the history of southern Texas occurred this week when a Missouri Pacific passenger train en route to Mission, Texas, hit a truck loaded with Mexican citrus pickers at a crossing on the outskirts of Alamo, leaving a death toll of 29 killed and 12 seriously injured. Arriving on the horrible scene almost immediately after the disaster, veteran KRGV News commentator Brad Smith, laboring to control his taut voice, vividly described the catastrophe in tense, staccato phrases.
There was a scene of indescribable horror and confusion when I first arrived. I stopped at the intersection of the railroad and Tower Road, and lying up and down the highway, or rather the railroad right-of-way, for a distance of 500 feet or more, were torn parts of bodies. It was the most horrible sight I've seen in 15 years of covering news stories here in the valley. I counted, personally, the moment after I arrived, 18 bodies lying within 100 feet of the spot where the train had struck the truck. I counted only 4 out of the 18 that were moving. A moment after I arrived, 2 Catholic priests arrived and began their last ministrations to the dead and dying. The truck was carried to the point where the train stopped, about 2 blocks west of the point of impact. The train was bloodstained from front to rear. Between the point of impact and the back of the last coach of the train, there were smoking remnants of human bodies and burning clothing, indicating the fire which occurred when the train smashed into the truck. Apparently, the gasoline tank exploded.
Washington, D.C., definitely declaring his candidacy in the forthcoming presidential race, Postmaster General James A. Farley delivered what was considered a severe blow to supporters of a third term for Franklin D. Roosevelt this week. In his first move in the direction of the White House, Postmaster Farley declares himself in support of a farm program divorced from party politics and praises both the Republican and Democratic parties for past farm legislation.
I believe that one of the reasons why the farm program has commanded such strong and nearly universal support from the farmers is the fact that its administration has been kept out of politics. When the program was launched back in 1933, a fundamental decision had to be made. The President, the Secretary of Agriculture, and the majority in Congress had to choose whether to follow the old political tradition using such a program for partisan advantage. The decision was made, and I believe it was made right, to keep the program out of politics. No farmer, regardless of his political affiliation, is barred from serving on the community and county committees which run the program. Years ago, the articles of the farmers' associations were so drawn as to prevent these associations from being used by committeemen or others for political purposes. We are proud of this record, which is a precedent in unselfish public service for either political party.
San Bernardino, California. While the fans were wondering how baseball's bad boy Dizzy Dean would behave with the Chicago Cubs, the Pittsburgh Pirates manager Frankie Frisch, interviewed in his spring training headquarters, had a good word to say for the Diz. Frisch is not making individual batting average predictions this week, but says he wants all 9 men to hit the ball.
Dizzy, in my opinion, is one of the greatest pitchers I've ever seen pitch. I'd like to see Dizzy come back and go along and come back like he pitched a few years ago. He worked, gave me everything he had, and he was always a great kid on a ball club. We never had what we'd call serious trouble. And he's a great boy in the game.
Well, then Dean wasn't really a hard man to handle from a managerial standpoint.
Not for me.
Well, maybe that brings in your discipline. While mentioning the Cards, whom you managed a few years back, what other teams have you played with or managed, Frankie?
Well, I've only managed the St. Louis Cardinals, and I've been in baseball, played for about 18 and a half years, but I managed 5 years.
Now, who promises to be your staunchest supporter this year as far as hitting is concerned? Who's going to be the boy that hits them up around 350?
Well, I'll let you know more about that in July. It's a little early in the season to be talking about who's going to do the hitting. I hope they all do it. I hope the 9 men I have out on that field will do the hitting.
Palm Springs. Basking in the warm sun of this popular winter resort is retired golf-playing Frank C. Adams, former president of the Jergens Soap Company. Taking life easy after a hard-working career, Mr. Adams has advice for young men seeking success.
Brent, what do you advise the young men to follow? I mean, after all, you had to start out sometime, and there's millions of young men that are going to start out in your footsteps. So what would you advise that they do?
Young man, be serious about the work that you enter. Opportunity offers itself to everybody, providing they'll deny themselves something in life to make a success.
In other words, they must have the work habit. Is that right?
That's right.
What is the secret of success? You should be able to answer that one.
It's application and hard work.
New York City. Best known of modern satirical cartoons are the boldly sketched dowagers and mustachioed gentlemen of Peter Arno. Amid the hurry and scurry of New York's bustling scene, Mr. Arno, interviewed in the Gotham nightclub, also has advice for young men seeking success.
What's the secret of your success, and we don't refer to your teeth either?
Now there's a question that I honestly can't answer. You kind of took me off guard there.
The secret of my success is
kind of tough. You know, in the old days they used to say, hard work and stick at it, you know, all that business.
That's right.
I can only say that if there's a lazier man in America or Europe or the Indies, I don't know of him, because I've really been the laziest man I ever heard of, and that's the only secret I can attribute my success to.
that really tears down a lot of illusions we've had about hard work, Mr. Arnold. But
well, I hope it does. I really hope it does. Yeah.
It certainly looks like a grand key to success. Tell me this. There are a lot of beginners, a lot of swell artists. We've really come across some swell artists in roving around the country, and some of the kids are really coming up, but they can't seem to get a break. Just what advice would you give to up-and-coming young artists who have a lot of ambition?
If they'll stay in bed about 12 hours a day, and I mean during the day, not during the night, and wait for the great chance to come to them. Don't go out plugging and seeing people and trying to get things to do. Just lie back, get a good book, and maybe a box of candy or a cigar or whatever else they like. It'll come to them if they've really got the stuff. But don't go out and look for it. They'll never find it. Just rest.
Virginia City, Nevada. Hollywood moved into Virginia City, staged the biggest parade and world premiere in history, and after the smoke cleared away, Piper's Opera House groaned and permitted some of its roof to relax and cave in. But the old theater stood firm long enough for the festivities to be dispatched, not the least of which was an auction for the benefit of the new Metropolitan Opera House Fund. The leather-lung, double-talking auctioneer is Hollywood's extrovert, Alan Hale, who does business with a cornerstone and an audience of movie stars.
All right now, ladies and gentlemen, here we go for the auction. These relics have been gathered from all over the West. And now they'll be auctioned off here in this oldest opera house in the West for the benefit of the Metropolitan Opera House of New York. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I give you that leather-lung chanter without a peer, that genius of the pounding gavel, your auctioneer, Hollywood's Alan Hale.
All right, Alan.
What is the first thing we have to sell?
The first thing we've got, Alan, is the contents of a cornerstone of the old Oddfellows National Guard Hall, which collapsed last week. May have gold and silver in it. May be worth a fortune. We don't know. It's right over there.
Why, there might be millions in it. I'll tell you, folks,
right.
Here we are in Virginia City, right in the heart of the downtown section, and I'm about to offer off the cornerstone of the thing that used to be the place in the building is. What am I offered for it? Who'll give me the... I hear from Governor Carville, $5. $10. Wayne Morris offered $10. $11. Guy Kibbe offers $11. No. Going.
$15.
$15. Miss Lillian Bond offers $15.
What am I offered again? What am I offered? Come on, we got to sell this thing now. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. 20 from Harry Rosenthal, the New York pianist. Oh, $35 from Mr. Bill Boyd. Going, going, going. Sold the bill. What's next? What's next?
Here we go. These are the original deeds to the Chawler Mines. The original deeds to the Chawler Mines drawn in 1860. Now, these deeds are for a mine which in 22 years has earned almost $1 million. There are the deeds right there to the mine.
Here you are, boys. Where are we going to start this? Now, here are the deeds to the Chawler Mines that in 20 years earned over $16 million. What am I offered? Four? Somebody started at five? Five. $2. Guy, give me $2. Who'll make it five? $5. Sold to Governor Carville for $5. He's a resident.
A recent development in radio news presentation, topical, informative, colorful, this unique record of the week's events offers the actual voices of the people who make the news. Unaltered, not reenacted, but authentically transcribed. Watch for the next release of the Radio Newsreel.